This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world.
Welcome to this week's episode of your home for everything modern day wrestling, Place to Be Nation's main event. I am Scott Criscolo. So, this is episode 191. So, you know, things happen. You know, whether it's issues in the ether, issues with technology. So, we had a great show for you planned this week. Of course, earlier this week, we lost one of our favorites in the history of professional wrestling. Reza Ramon, the great Scott Hall, passed away earlier this week at the age of 63. Well, myself and the Godfather, Nate Milton, did a nice segment A of this week's show, just him and I, where we talked about Scott Hall's career and some of his great moments and the legacy he left. Well, guess what? I think that segment went up with Scott Hall to heaven because I can't find it. It vanished. It vanished in the ether. It vanished on my computer. So guess what? You're not going to get that. I'm really sorry. You will get a little bit of Scott Hall, though, because earlier this week we did pre-tape our newest installment of the main event classic TNA pay-per-view recap. Myself, Nate Milton, and of course Steve Willey. So you're going to get that this week. But sadly, the segment Nate Milton and I did honoring the great Scott Hall is gone in the ether. I think in my over 10 years of podcasting, I think that's happened to me like three times, where a segment's just totally vanished. It did not save on Skype. It did not pass go. It did not collect $200. Gone. My apologies. It happens. But we did talk nicely about Scott Hall. Maybe we'll do a little bit in 2 weeks when we have our Mega Mania episode 192, when we talk about everything happening in the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex in a couple of weeks. So now you're going to hear the B block, the second half of our show, where Nate, Steve, and I did the classic TNA pay-per-view recap from the March 5th, 2003 episode of NWA/TNA. But I will do the plugs, because the plugs were in that first segment. So I, of course, will plug the Great Kings of Sport Patreon. $5 gets you in the door. Or you could be like Steve Willey and I, kicking a little more, and you get to sit in the cool section. You get to sit in the Razor Ramon section. Oye, chico. But they, of course, Nate has great content, Kings of Sport, all the great shows with his boy Chris Ely and all the rest of the gang over there. So check out the great stuff going on over on the Kings of Sport Patreon. And, of course, the great stuff over here on the in the Quad of Pods. Of course, the PTB Wrestling Network. A new episode of Through the Looking Glass just dropped yesterday. Earlier this week, new episode of PTBN's Pedestal. Andy Atherton joined the guys to talk about Hulk Hogan versus The Rock from WrestleMania X8. We got a big weekend of NWA action. We got the Saturday special Saturday morning, where Dr. G, George Rubellino, and I preview the Crockett Cup. Then we will have two nights of Place to Be Nation Twitch feeds of alternate commentary for the two nights of the Crockett Cup. And then on Monday morning here on the feed, we will have the reaction special for the show. And then don't forget the PTB Pop Experience, the Jenny Position, and the No-So. All right, so let's go now to segment B, the B block, as we call it, where myself, Nate Milton, Steve Willey go back to March 5th, 2003 for the newest installment of the main event TNA Classic Pay-Per-View Recap. Enjoy. So now, let's bring in the third member of our team. He was a little late, but that's okay. He was probably doing something wonderful for someone else. Or was he? Clear your conscience, Steve Willey.
Come clean.
You people know who he is, but you don't know why he's here, man.
Now this is, if I am remembering right, this is the Dennis Rodman episode?
It is. Yes, very good.
So we have a fellow NWO member gracing
us. That is right.
On this.
It's true.
Scott one memorial. More for the good guys. One
yeah, the Scott Hall Memorial. Yeah, very not so, unexpected, but you know, very sad.
No, it is very sad. What sucks is, and Nate and I have been talking about it here in the A block, is that, you know, this wasn't even a death, sadly, based on his demons. Mm-hmm. He didn't die of an overdose. He wasn't found at some skanky hotel in Orlando or something. He was, you know, it was a legit medical issue, which, and that makes it even worse because Nate and I were saying that, you know, here's a guy who clearly was cleaning his life up. And, you know, we kind of picked on him a little bit in the early TNA episodes, which we'll get to our newest one shortly. But again, like what sucks is like most of the guys in that first year of TNA, they should not have been working. They should have been taking care of themselves. And as we saw in February of 03, one of them did not. And we're, of course, talking about Kurt Hennig, who did not take care of himself like those guys should have instead of being hired in 2002. But we spent a pretty good hunk of time, Steve, talking about the legacy of Scott Hall. I think a guy that we were saying, you know, is underappreciated in the annals of WWE. Maybe, you know, like, because obviously on that list of guys who never won a world championship, at least singles, he was multi-time tag champion in multiple promotions. But never a singles world champion. But Steve, clearly a guy, and obviously we'd love to hear your thoughts and your memories as a kid of whether it was Starship, whatever he was. I'm still trying to figure it out. We were trying to remember it in the first segment. Or when he was with Kurt Hennig at AWA or Diamond Stud, or like what are your memories as a fan growing up of Scott Hall?
Well, I have memories in some of the like books I had from a kid, you know, in those Scholastic book.
Oh, yeah.
They had some wrestling ones back in the day. And Scott Hall had the big giant hair and the Magnum PI mustache.
Yep.
And then the shock of seeing, and I saw him in AWA a couple times, but then the shock of seeing him come in to WCW as like the Diamond Stud and like, wait,
yep,
that's the same Scott Hall. That blew my mind.
Yep.
And then, of course, the segments introducing with Razor Ramon was very – that was pretty much when I got cable for the second time. I had it when I was little, but we got cable again right around that time when – right before Raw started and Razor became more of a heavy hitter, I'd say, in WWF, like with Flair, with Hennig and all that. Of course, being from Chicago, the SummerSlam 94 with Walter Payton, that was actually a pretty big deal in the area, with the opening of the United Center, and then everything NWO, yeah, everything WCW, like that, without Scott Hall and Kevin Nash, there would have been no Monday Night War. It's pretty, yeah, like it was sad to see him go so far downhill, and he obviously had his demons. Mm-hmm. And then seeing him kind of very slowly have some setbacks, come back up, do a lot with DDP, and what is kind of sad to me is seeing all these tributes that have come out over the last couple of days from other wrestlers, and what a great mind and what a great person he has been, and I really wish that had been more out in the public eye over the while he was going through all these troubles. It just, you know, he was a joke. He was like a meme before a meme. The mm-hmm. you know, some of the indie shows where he'd come out barely able to walk. I feel like it would have been really great to know more of these stories before he passed away.
Right. I mean, we're talking about
63. Only 63.
Yeah. And like Nate and I were talking earlier, you know, here's a guy who cleaned up his life, went to DDP, mm-hmm. you know, just like Jake did. And by the way, I know even though he's, you know, clear of his demons, we'd like to think, another guy passes away and somehow, and this, I'm not saying this because he doesn't deserve to, but somehow Jake Roberts is still alive. I mean, and I'm not saying that, or for that matter, superstar Billy Graham who's an ungrateful son of a bitch, who's now on his third liver, and still blames everybody else for why he's had three livers. So Scott Hall definitely seemed like a guy that was finally at peace with his issues, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And it just seemed really sad, you know, and when we have these, you know, death in the wrestling family, you know, we understand there's guys who passed away that aren't at that level, but we all feel that feeling like Piper. And, you know, I saw somebody sent the picture of Welcome Brother, and there's a, you know, it's like, you know, the back of Razor, and he's looking up at heaven, and then there's, you know, Piper and Dusty and Eddie and Savage and Owen and Rude and Sherry and Elizabeth, you know, like the whole, you know, like that whole thing they do now where there's that rarefied air of wrestling passings, you know, and now Razor goes in that, will clearly go in that group as well. And it's the truth. You know, we sat here and we goofed about it in our early TNA recaps in 02 when he was there, because he shouldn't have been there. And that's why
he was,
you know, yeah. And that's why, guys, when we talk about AEW and stuff, and there's a company, and I'll give Tony his due. He started that company very differently than Jarrett started this company that we're about to do our next edition of tonight. I mean, 2/3 of that roster was guys that should have been either in a facility or home and not working and not being on the road, you know, like just, there was no, it was sad that, and we're going to have another episode tonight where we have some highlights, but we most certainly have some lowlights, you know, but in any event, rest in peace, Razor. You were the bad guy. Bad times. What is it? Bad times don't last, but bad guys do. And what would we say is our favorite? I've always said, and I waited, Nate, I didn't want to bring it up when you and I were on, because I wanted all of us to pick. I've always contended, and maybe it's because they were just better wrestlers by that point, I've always had a soft spot for the SummerSlam 95 ladder match a little bit more than the WrestleMania 10 ladder match. Am I off base, Nate?
I mean, they're both great. I think, you know, it comes down to a matter of personal preference. I think, you know, the earlier ladder match does get points because it was the earlier match, you know. And
right, true.
You know, you have a foundation to build on for the later match. But I think so much emphasis is put on the character. And, you know, we talked a lot about the character, Scotty.
Mm-hmm.
Like, the character, like, was so outgoing and so outsized that people didn't even, like, nobody stopped to think, like, wait a minute, maybe this guy's not Cuban after all. Like, like I think the persona was so integral to Hall that we often overlook. Like, when he was right and when he was, you know, not, you know, battling his demons, he was actually a damn good wrestler, bell to bell.
Yeah, he was. Yep. Utilized his size very well. Is there any other matches, Nate, that stick out for you besides those two?
I mean, I think, honestly, maybe his most important match is actually a loss, and that's the loss to the 1-2-3 Kid.
Yep.
Because not only did that kind of put it definitely put Waltman on the map, but it also made Monday Night Raw in those early days like a show that, like, you had to watch because you didn't know what was going to happen.
Exactly. I agree.
So I think there are probably matches I enjoyed more, particularly when you talk about, you know, the early days of the NWO. But in terms of importance, like, maybe that's one of his most important matches, along with the ladder match.
Right. Steve, any come to mind for you?
I always liked the one against Brett in his Rumble 93.
Yes. Well, they wrestled twice. They wrestled at Rumble 93, and then they wrestled in the quarterfinals of King of the Ring 93.
Yeah, the Royal Rumble one is the one I remember. And
me too.
Bret Hart. I mean, Bret Hart is such a great writer, and he always he doesn't really sugarcoat things, which I can kind of appreciate. And he wrote up that match being one of his favorite ever. And poor Brett, like, he also lost his niece on the same day to suicide, unfortunately.
That's right.
But that was one that once he brought that up, I remember that very clearly. I'm sure I've seen that match, you know, a good 3 or 4 times.
Mm-hmm.
You know, obviously the Bash at the Beach match, while it wasn't great or by any means, it was industry changing.
Yep.
And the one I've heard it brought up a few times that I might have seen when it aired, but have not since then, mm-hmm. was the Click tag match on it from Action Zone. Diesel. And
oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Yep. Oh, yeah.
I'm going to have to look that one up. I don't know if it's on the network or if it's just a YouTube thing.
That match is awesome. Yeah, it was Razor and... Right? What was it? Razor and...
Razor Kid? And Kid versus Diesel and Sean.
Yep. Yeah. No, that match is outrageous because it was them. They mm-hmm. were going to make sure... They were going to make sure it was outrageous, you know?
And that show, when it started, was this weird stand by itself, like real under the radar.
Yeah.
Didn't they have like a Brett Owen match on there that was.
Yeah, it was Brett's last. It was Owen's last title shot.
Yeah.
That was the big thing. Yep. Yep. Yeah. Action Zone was a weird show. That was one of those weird syndicateds that, as far as I know, a lot of people may not have gotten. You know,
yeah.
So,
but it was only 30 episodes.
Yeah, but they always seem to have had one gem in there. Mm-hmm. So, well, sad. Another member of our childhood. I mean, when Razor was at his peak, I was in college, so I wasn't that young. But I definitely remember, and I was like I was saying to Nate earlier, I remember him from the Starship Eagle. Or whatever the hell it was, him and Spivvy, him and Dan Spivvy, as the Duke used to say, and then of course him and Kurt Hennig were a good little tag team in AWA. They were tag team champions in AWA, and then of course he became the Diamond Stud. He was DDP's guy, and then of course Razor. So rest in peace, Scott Hall. You will be sadly missed, and of course we will end the show with your theme. All right. Well, to piggyback that, let's go to the promotion that Scott Hall was part of when it launched. And thankfully, he wasn't there anymore. We go to the next installment of your complete mind eraser. This is, you know, more numbing than an Irish car bomb, which is fitting to say on St. Patty's Day. How you like that, huh? it is time for the next installment of your Place to Be Nation's main event classic TNA pay-per-view recap. For tonight, we go back to March 5th, 2003 from the fairgrounds. And we had like that weird, you know, Vince Russo promo thing, which we'll talk about. A lot of weird stuff on this show. A lot of good matches. A lot of good in-ring on this show. And then some more weird fucking run-in stuff, which I'm ready to just lay into. I am ready to just totally lay into. So again, our date is March 5th, 2003, episode 35. Champions roll call, just to recap, your world champion, still Jeff Jarrett. Your X division champion is Kid Cash, and your tag team champions still vacant. Although on our next installment, the March 12th episode, that will be rectified, just looking ahead. But for the moment, it is vacant. All right, Steve, let's get started.
All right. Well, we start up in the Ravens perch, not the Raven's nest, the Raven's perch. And Raven is giving what I will now refer to as a Dan Lambert promo, where it's clearly memorized and he's just stating it word for word. Not, you know, he practiced it in the car in the parking lot quite a bit. He quotes Pete Townsend, He says to Sandman that this is going to be his Hiroshima, which is a little much.
Jesus.
He's going to handle out woe and sorrow to those who oppose me. My favorite part of the promo was the Raven's Nest sign, which was looked to be drawn on a chalkboard. And it reminded me of Lucy Van Pelt from Peanuts and her psychiatric health 5 cents.
It would for you.
So, yeah, and then there's this massive edit, just massive cut. And all of a sudden, Kevin Sullivan is in the ring and the lights are out. And he says that he's been doing violence forever. He talks about a feud he had with Ray Stevens, which I'm sure the TNA crowd is going to be really understanding of.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. So he says he is going to not be the referee for the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match, but he's going to be the special observer.
God.
And we probably should say that he's shirtless and wearing painted on stripes to look like a referee. We see Raven fall down from behind, and we don't know exactly who attacked him, but they told us it's Sandman. And so Sandman attacks Raven. They have their match later on, and it turned out the reason why there was such a big edit and the video was only 103 minutes instead of 120 was that Correct. There was a power outage at the fairgrounds. TNA.
Honestly, is anybody clamoring for that extra 17 minutes, Steve Willis?
No.
I saw that.
Shirtless Kevin Sullivan more than I'm more than happy that you know, somebody kicked the plug.
I was kind of excited by it. It made I usually spit it up into a couple watches, and it's like, oh yeah, that's I can probably get this done in 3 watches instead of 4 now. Yeah, I don't think anybody missed it, and really these shows could all be 90 minutes and cut some of this stuff out, and it would be much better.
I concur. Actually, that's what they should have done: charge $7.50 and given you an hour and a half.
Mm-hmm.
Because they're pretty much charging you $2.50 a half hour. So yeah. Pretty much. So I'll take the discount. Raven's promos. Let's talk about that for a few seconds. Because sometimes, I mean, I have to be honest, even in like his peak of ECW, like 95, 96, 97, 95, 96, I always felt like Raven's promos were rehearsed.
Mm-hmm.
I always felt that.
Mm-hmm.
They never felt spontaneous, and everyone says he was the most mysterious psychology stick man of all time. I don't know. I think he's kind of overrated. I felt like he was a memorizer. You know,
tried a little too hard. I think sometimes too.
And really, Hiroshima. I mean, seriously, are there any fucking standard S&P department in that fucking company? I mean, really. Jesus. Yeah,
Raven is, he was good in ECW because, again, Heyman was there. And it's like, if you have somebody that is produced by Rick Rubin or produced by a pre-crazy Kanye who's out trying to kill some random comedian. Like, if you have an album produced by Quincy Jones, like, you know you're going to have at least a good foundation. What Raven did was when he went from ECW to later WCW and then TNA, you went from having Quincy Jones produce your records to having like Jim Jones, and not the Diplomats Jim Jones, but Guyana Jim Jones produce your records. since we're bringing up huge casualties tonight, Raven. So yeah, like without the production around him, you just get the performance. And the performance to me is only as good as the mystery surrounding it. And there's no mystery in Nashville.
There's no mystery in Nashville, though. There's not even lights.
Yes. Yes, exactly. So, all right. Can we get some wrestling now?
Yeah, absolutely.
They don't do this enough. Can we open with like a match? That'd be
just
nice.
Just right into it. Yeah, Conan is out and he's inviting his latest luchador to the ring, and this time it's going to be super crazy. Both come out to the smooth by Santana ripoff, which I believe this might be the third wrestler has used this. I know that, oh man, like I watched this first part a couple weeks ago and I didn't put it in notes. Who was the really tall guy from the first few episodes of Dynamite? Not Dynamite, good God, TNA. Hispanic. He comes back later on. He's got one word for his name. Come on, Nate. You know this. It's going to bother me.
Ciclope?
What's that?
Ciclope?
Never mind. We'll figure it out later.
El Dandy?
Sorry. Looked like he was getting a push in the Battle Royals. And
yeah. And I know who you're talking about. I can't think of his name right now. Apollo.
Apollo. Yeah, I was going to say Antonio.
Apollo.
Yeah, yes. Apollo used this music first. Someone else did later. And now Super Crazy and Conan have it. Super Crazy is going to go against Jerry Lynn to continue the Jerry Lynn versus Luchadors storyline, which I actually quite enjoy, where Conan is saying this X Division is just a complete ripoff of Lucha Libre. And we're going to prove it. And Jerry's like, hey, it's a hybrid, and I'm going to prove that my way is better. Super Crazy, I don't know if you've seen him in recent years. Super Crazy is he's very fat, and I saw him in like 2010, and he was absolutely gigantic. And we see the start of that in this match, where he's already switched from his singlet to wrestling in a t-shirt, which is never a good sign when you see a guy older wrestling in a t-shirt. So the crowd's initially behind JL, but there's a little bit more cheering for Super Crazy. You know, there was a fair amount for Hoovy too. Jerry Lynn is immediately showing that he too knows the lucha style, learned in the south of the border of Canada, of course, in Minnesota. He does a run out of a powerbomb to a tilt-a-whirl by Jerry Lynn. There's a running Hurricane Rana off of the apron by Super Crazy. And then we get the ECW throwback to Counting Fists in Nashville Knows Basic Spanish, so that is good. There's a springboard twisting DDT by JL that just spiked Super Crazy into the mat. Chases each other around the ring, and there's a spinning heel kick, springboard to an acai moonsault by Super Crazy up to the top rope, does the same thing in a ring, but Jerry hits his TKO to stop Crazy, and Conan distracts for a pile driver. There's a top rope moonsault for two after the first couple ones, a sit out spinning powerbomb for two. But Lynn reverses the Rana off the top rope and hits three. So now Jerry Lynn wins once again, foils Conan's plans. Conan is now mad at Super Crazy too and slaps him around. So a lot of stuff happened. Those matches are hard to recap, especially when you've seen them a couple weeks ago and you're like, wait, who did what? But right. Yeah, a very good match. And like I said, I do legitimately like this angle. Clearly Vince Russo has nothing to do with it.
Yeah, this has easily been one of the better parts of the show week to week. I feel like this match was a step below the Hoovy match, which I really liked, but it was still a good opener. And honestly, we could have done without all of the Raven nonsense and just given this match a couple extra more minutes. I think it would have been much better for the crowd, who was actually into it. And like you said, you know, I like that they are differentiating at least a little bit between the actual luchador and Conan, who is obviously the heel in this story, but we saw them get a little bit behind Hoovy, and you know, Super Crazy had some support in this match. So I like this story, knowing that it's TNA. I know it's not going to end well, but at least for now, I'm enjoying it, Steve Willis.
Yeah, we've had a couple good weeks so far of it. We'll see how it plays out. I honestly don't know. And at some point, right, it's gonna go somewhere. I'm wondering if Conan is going to wrestle Jerry Lynn at this point, because I don't know what his health is in 2003. So yeah, don't know what's gonna happen there, but Interested for it to keep going. It's not the Harris brothers, so it's always a bonus, right?
Meltzer gave it 3.75, so that's pretty solid. I liked it. I mean, it's Jerry Lynn. Jerry Lynn's going to give you your time was 8:58. So he's, you know, if you ask him to give you 9 great minutes, he's going to give you 9 great minutes.
Yeah, he's had very few bad matches, and that's more to the opponent than anything, because didn't he wrestle like David Flair in one of these?
Yeah, you know, and Super Crazy definitely is not 1997 Super Crazy, that's for sure. But he served its purpose, and he could have been worse. But, I mean, it was fairly solid enough, I would say.
Mm-hmm.
So.
All right, so now we have our spooky music and filter that they've been using a lot the last few weeks to do recap. And this is just the recap of Jeff Jarrett versus Russo and Russo's kids. Russo, you see him back in what looks to be the principal's office at a school. I don't know why that's his office, but that's what it looks like. He gives his weekly reference to Vince McMahon and WWE. He starts trying to act, painting himself as a victim in all this. He's not a wrestler. He wasn't trained in the NXT Performance Center on promos. Let's just say that he's just trying to act. He just heard his kids tell him how he was a deadbeat dad, and in the most tasteless moment of the show. And we've had a lot of tasteless moments, but we haven't had too many lately. This one is, as he's trying desperately to act and be sad that, like, oh, that really hurt me, that he's a deadbeat dad. He then has the gall to say that he doesn't want to end up that where his kids don't have a father, like what just happened with Kurt Hennig. And yeah. Kurt Hennig died, I believe, 2 weeks before this.
So at least two, maybe three. Yeah.
Yeah. Just trash to bring that up. He's leaving, and of course he's leaving, right? Like, obviously an angle, but he just can't seem to see his sons again. And he tells Tanay, you know, hey, you think it's a work, but it's not. This isn't an angle, guys. So the old Vince Russo worked shoot. Here we go.
Listen, bro, the cat's in the cradle and the silver spoon. Little boy blue and the man in the moon. He said, when you're coming home, Vince, I don't know when, but we'll be together soon, bro.
Oh, God.
That's what we need, funny. A Vince Russo rendition of the Cats, in,
cats
the
in the Cradle.
The only good part about this was that it was short.
Yeah.
We had a lot less Vince Russo on this show.
Yes. Thank God. But yeah, like, I think what's most upsetting is that there really is no, and this is why we've said all along, Vince Russo cannot be his own boss, because, you know, the reason his stuff was so great in WWF is because he had a filter. And even 1999 Vince knew when to draw the line, you know. Mm-hmm. As times progressed, I think Vince's line got a little more faded. But even in 1999 standards, Vince knew what was good and what was stupid, you know? Yeah. And but there's no filter here. I mean, they just say whatever, because they have this odd feeling that the fans, even in 2003, the fans still dig this, like, cutting edge, scathing, shooty promos. And by 2003, we're like, yeah. You know, all right, now you're being offensive. You know, it was one thing to be funny, cutting edge, you know, attitude era. Now you're just being cruel, you know. Mm-hmm. It's just different, you know.
Well, and the thing with, even with McMahon, you have to give him credit for, at least, is when he inserted himself into these programs, whether it be with Stone Cold or Bret Hart or whoever, like, Vince was there at the end to take a beating.
Yep.
Whereas Russo very rarely, if ever, gets any sort of comeuppance in any of these storylines.
Nope. Ego was too big. Nope. Couldn't do it. I agree. He has a good point, Steve.
Yeah, absolutely.
Vince never had to eat a Vince Russo never ate a plate of shit ever.
He Jarrett got a couple punches on him during the last episode before he was right. saved.
Yeah.
All right, should we go on to the next match here? So, Disciples of the New Church, Brian Lee and Slash against the Hotshots, who are back together with SCX. I believe they came back last week or the week before.
Mm-hmm.
And while we don't have Vince Russo on this show anymore, we do have the first of three appearances of Glenn Gilberti and Mike Sanders, who is out with the Hotshots. Though Sonny Siaki instantly becomes a face in my eyes because he says that with Vince Russo is gone, he is the next in charge. So Siaki and Desire are out to tell Glenn and Sanders to leave. Slash immediately is taking care of both of the Hotshots. We see Truth in the crowd for the first of two times this evening. And I caught today say later on that he was out in the crowd for the tag team matches. So interesting development there. Don't exactly know where that's going. But, you know, in this case, like, hey, another, I don't know where the Conan angle is going. I don't know where the Truth angle is going. I'm actually intrigued by it instead of not wanting to see anything to do with these people. Truth looks sad. He looks pensive. They're not really paying attention to this match today. And West, which is not generally normal. So if they're not paying attention to this match and I don't care for the church, why should I? I guess. Crowd is really, really quiet after Slash does his Whirly Bird, which I think is his finisher. There's a bunch of missed tag top rope moves that they all do to each other and kind of like a comedy spot. Just a bunch of missed time kickouts with the ref in the way. Riley hits with a chain. They do a big splash combo. There's a big kick out from that splash combo and chain shot, which got zero reaction. Church, though, does hit a Doomsday Device drop kick for the win, which is kind of a cool move. Then for some reason, the Nazi brothers come out and they're really pissed at the Hotshots. I think because the Hotshots lost to the church, and then the Nazis threw the Hotshots out of the building. So I guess after a couple weeks, the Hotshots are done with SEX? Question mark. The story is that without Vince Russo, our Lord and Savior, SEX just can't handle anything.
It's almost like the inmates are running the asylum, Steve Willie.
Yeah.
Yeah, which it is the asylum. Again, it's another example of just lack of filters, lack of checks and balances. I mean, it's kind of disappointing because, you know, you got a guy like Jeff Jarrett and Jerry who've been in this business a long time, and Jerry was dealing with, you know, Lawler and all that shit back in the day and Austin Idol and all that. And you don't think that, like, I understand that we want to be like, you know, that, you know, pushing the envelope that WWE isn't in the era of ruthless aggression. But the reality of it is, you got to draw the line, and there's no line drawing here. On top of the fact, the worst part is that half these guys in this faction are a bunch of fucking losers who wouldn't be doing anything else.
God. Yeah.
So, and trust me, I'm going to get to the cream of the, to not steal from a guy who was not a loser, Randy Savage, the cream of the crop of losers, which we'll talk about shortly. But all right. Chris matches.
Yeah. Bunch of losers.
Losers.
So Goldie is with Sandman, and I don't think Goldie is acting when she's around Sandman. I think she generally is disgusted being around him. The Sandman, I don't know if this was Scott Keith invented this term, but like shoe comments, which weren't supposed to be shoe comments. And Sandman has one here. He tells Goldie, to tell you the truth, I don't know what the hell to call this match. And he's right. Like, it's like he's like, yeah, I'm just going to go out there. And he looked pretty drunk at this point already. And then we go right to our second spooky music filter of the night with the most questionable angle so far. The faction of David Flair, Eric Watts, and Brian Lawler, who we don't think are associated with SEX anymore because they're coming out. They're not coming out of that dressing room. They're coming out other regular on the down the regular aisles. So we have a interview with Jeff Jarrett and Tanae. They both say that no one believes Russo is leaving. Then we question why they're doing the angle to begin with, if we all know he's coming back anyways. That Jarrett kind of went away for a bit to help Vince Russo and his family. They make a second WWF and WCW reference. Out comes Eric Watts and David Flair to talk. He's like, you know, you left us. You are a second generation wrestler. And we are all second generation wrestlers, and you left us out. You left us out there. And I, for the life of me, and I'm going to ask you guys, where's there? Like, what did he leave David Flair, Eric Watts, and Brian Lawler? Like, where did he leave them? Like, I don't think Jarrett was around when Eric Watts was.
If there's one thing that could have helped Techno Team 2000, it's a country and western singer.
Yeah. there's a third WWF reference. Watts is seemingly the leader of this group. He's mad that Jeff Jarrett didn't help him. Again, I don't know where that is. And so then he's cutting a promo about all of his accomplishments. And I don't know, again, if this is supposed to be tongue-in-cheek, his accomplishments, or someone's playing, you know, like he really believes that, but he was tried out and was signed to a contract after 21 days. He was WCW Rookie of the Year after 4 months. And remember, back in those days, it was like the PWI working with WCW to come up with fake awards. So yeah, he's bragging about this, and you hear the crowd starts going, shut him up, and we don't care, which is one of the first times I think TNA fans have turned against angles.
All right.
I knew you were ready to go off on Eric Watts, so I'm excited by this. Another instance where I don't know how long he's around for.
All right. I'm going to understand that half these bums like Lawler and, you know, and Gilberti and all these other guys. All right. They're not exactly, you know, top of the line, but okay. But they all won something in their careers. They all had halfway decent careers. They won championships in some capacity, whether it's mostly tag, but you know, maybe the random cruiser. And I think Disco might have won the TV belt, I think, at some point in like 99 or some shit. But why would you have Eric Watts be the spokesperson of this band of doofuses? Because he's got the sexiest mullet? It's your loser doofus, probably still a virgin, brother Joel, who the best he could do was cut fucking video packages for Mid-South because his announcing skills was like marbly marbles. He probably has more respect in the industry than you do. Hi, remember when I won WCW Rookie of the Year, Jeff, and you didn't? Wow. Thanks, Eric. What's that trophy for now? A doorstop? How about tenderizing steak? What else do you use that trophy for, Eric? Because you know what it got you? A big pile of nothing. You were a decade of loser. You were a glorified jobber whose father may or may not have been a veiled racist, but actually treated his other son with more respect, and he was a marble-mouthed doofus just as much as you. But at least he realized, hey, I'm not a wrestler. I'm going to do video packages. You, Eric, should have done the same fucking thing because your career is garbage. And to be the face of this group of marble-mouthed, clearly doped up, ready to hit either the bar, the strip club, or the morgue, just speaks volumes on what the point of building this TNA roster was all about. This is it. Eric Watts reading off his resume, which you could write on a matchbook, to Jeff Jarrett. This is TNA at its best right now. we get an awesome Kid Jerry Lynn match. We're going to get a pretty good Kid Cash match in a couple minutes. And you have a pretty decent core X Division roster. Then you waste 9 minutes on Eric Watts. Eric Watts! You don't even give coked up Brian Lawler the promo. At least he'd be more entertaining and he might pop a blood vessel. But no. No. We've got to give it to the 1990 or 89, whatever stupid year he won, WCW Rookie of the Year. How about that, Jeff? You've actually won WCW championships. May have been in the downside, but it was still a WCW World Championship. Intercontinental Champion. Had good matches with aforementioned Razor Ramon in 1995. Who were you wrestling in 1995, Eric Watts? Man Mountain Rock? PN News? Not Man Mountain Rock. He was in WWF. Van Hammer? Was he in 1995? I don't even know. So if this is the best you're going to do, I shudder to think how this stupid faction even survived these early stages of 2003. I just don't get it. Is this literally the best you can do? Eric Watts. Was he techno or was he team?
Oh, I don't know. Travis and Troy.
Was he well or was he done? Oh, no, those are actual real guys. Never mind.
Wow. Check. We should do an Eric Watts retrospective. I mean, they did a Dr. Death Steve Williams tagging with Sting versus Jushin Thunder Liger and Eric Watts.
Mm. Wow. Talk about riding the... That's like that Survivor Series... The Survivor Series 88 team that just happened to have Scott Casey on it, mm-hmm. You know, that's like having, okay, that's like a Survivor Series podcast team, like a 5-man team of like Steve Willey, Scott Criscolo, Nate Milton, Justin Rosero, and then you throw just Jordan Duncan on the back end.
I was going to say Eric Watts, and then you throw Eric Watts in there.
And then you throw Eric Watts or Jordan Duncan, one or the other, because Jordan Duncan's the Eric Watts of no, he's not. I love he'd probably be like, well, yeah, I might even be better than Eric Watt. No, but it's just ridiculous. This is the best you're going to do. I mean, really? I mean, I'm done, Steve. Thank you. Thank you. That was very therapeutic. If you have anything else, Nate, I'd be more than happy to add it to my address.
Thank you for yielding time.
Yes, sir. Of course.
Senator Criscolo. But here's the thing. Here's how bad Eric Watts' promo was. He dragged down Jeff Jarrett's performance in this segment. Because this was not the... Like, we know Jeff Jarrett. You know, he's no Ric Flair. He's no Rock. But he can cut a promo. Jeff Jarrett was bad in this segment, I thought. or at least not up to his usual standards. And yes. I don't blame that on Jeff. I blame that on being in such close proximity to this triumvirate, Steve Willie, of of nepotism and failure that he had to be in the ring with.
I can't believe he was back for so long in WCW in 99. He was there for the whole year. Did some ECW house shows in 2000. Was in All Japan Wrestling tagging with Steve Williams. All Japan must have been really bad.
Should have been his best year, because yeah. then he's finally caught up to the future.
Yeah. Took me a second.
That should have been the best year of Eric Watts' career, maybe life, is 2000. Travis and Troy should have gone on the reunion tour.
It really, I mean, he in 2000, this is not a joke, he was in All Japan and he was on tag teams opposite, he tagged with Stan Hansen. He was in matches with Kenta Kobashi and Misawa. Eric Watts.
So the question then is, Steve Willie, when is WH Park going to put out the Eric Watts All Japan t-shirt?
So in other words,
Eric Watts has a win over Kenta Kobashi.
So in other words, Steve, Eric Watts was the Spider Rico of All Japan. Pretty much. facing the Rocky Balboas of All Japan. Wait a minute. Hold on. You got to find that match now, Steve. I don't believe it. We got to find that.
Yeah, in 2000, so in 99, the entire year, he came back to WCW. So he was pretty much gone from his little few match run in 96 for Techno Team 2000. Goes to, you know, just basically doing a bunch of syndicated and Saturday night job matches, a couple Nitro job matches in 99. I don't even think he beat anyone the whole year. Did a couple house shows in ECW, then goes to Japan in May of 2000. Now, I'm not I know a bit of this time period, but I'm definitely not an expert. But he tagged with Johnny Ace and lost to Amori and Yoshihiro Takayama, who was this really giant of a man. And I think they were called No Fear. Was that tag team? And so they lost that. Let's see. He tagged with Dr. Death for a while. Tagged with Stan Hansen. Was in a losing cause at a six-way to a team that included Misawa. Oh, God, this is going to be a barn burner. Johnny Ace and Mike Barton, although that would be Bart Gunn, defeated Eric Watts and Steve Williams. I'm sure the Japanese fans were very excited. But, yeah, hold on one second. Let me get back to this match that I saw. Eric Watts and Dr. Death Steve Williams on May 23rd, 2000, defeated Kentaro Shiga and Kenta Kobashi in a tag match. He should have said that instead of I beat Kenta Kobashi. I tagged with Stan Hansen.
That's funny.
WCW Rookie of the Year.
Yeah. And plus they'd probably be like, why is Eric Watts talking about those Italians?
I lost to Spike Dudley in 9 seconds on a ECW Hardcore TV episode.
I can't believe we've spent like 15 minutes talking about Eric Watts.
Yeah, I think that's time to move on, except when we have to talk about him in a few minutes as well. Maybe worse than Eric Watts is this next match, which was Disgrace Land, who the former Luther Biggs jobber. He's back and still with SEX, and he comes out to face Jorge Estrada, who I thought was gone at this point, but not. Jorge has his hair combed out really far, and he is greased up and ready to go. No longer a flying Elvis. Sanders and Disco are out again, and Saki again takes them back. They forgot to put the camera on the ring because they were showing Sanders, Disco, and Siaki. So we missed part of the match, which kudos to the production team on that.
Oh yeah.
There's a mist splash. This match was in slow motion. Disgraceland, I said, was possibly the worst wrestler we've seen since those beginning, like, comedy shows that you know, those first few episodes. And Estrada wins in, like, I want to say, like, 3 minutes. And that is about it. It's really nothing else to say.
It consider that the palate cleanser, Steve Willie.
Yeah, because there's some good stuff to come here.
They had to get it out of their system first.
We've had so many palate cleansers in our time. There's no palate left. But anyway.
So this is March 5th?
Yes.
Okay, so this looks to be it for Jorge Estrada. They gave him the Disgraceland treatment on the way out. And he's only wrestles for about 2 months more before. I believe we talked in a previous show that he got into trouble with the law. And, yeah, that's it. He did beat Truth Martini in IWA Mid-South a month before this. Didn't know Truth wrestled that early. But, yeah, Jorge Estrada, that is all. That is all we will see of him. What's your favorite Jorge Estrada moment?
It's too many to choose from.
Yeah. He was hot for like two weeks.
It's like picking your favorite Michael Bolton song. You just love all of them, Steve.
When he had the Sonny Siaki feud for a couple of weeks. And this is also the last of Disgraceland. So that is good as well.
So it's the rare winner and loser leave town match.
Leave the fairgrounds. Yeah, we don't really.
If they hurry, they can catch up to the hot shots. <Split a cab. laughs>
Goldie's in the locker room. Siaki and Sanders are still fighting, and that's about it there. They do the behind the what is this new segment called with like the hot seat, I think it's called, where Tanae and Wes just start asking quick questions of someone, and they're asking Kid Cash. Not one of the better hot seats, but my two favorite answers when he was asked who his mentor was, he said Ricky Morton. And when he was asked to describe Paul Heyman, his response was Jewish. That's it. Jewish.
I mean, to be fair, it's accurate.
It is accurate.
I don't think even Paul wouldn't dispute that.
Yes. I don't think it needed to be said, but okay. Okay.
Like, I think that's a fact we can all agree on. No one's disputing it.
So the next match, it does involve Kid Cash, and he's defending against the Amazing Red. And this, I want to take a brief detour because we don't go over this because, like, it's pointless, but we always have the two cage dancers dancing in between most matches. That's been a thing since day one. Did you guys see the one cage dancer in this? Besides, I think Lollipop is one of them.
Yeah, Lollipop's always there. She's like the Ric Flair of the TNA cage dancer.
She's the
coach. The second cage dancer in this episode was some guy that was dressed in a costume with it was a blink if you miss it, blink and you miss it moment. They showed him twice. He had like this weird, like cheap superhero costume, like you might get at Party City, and like unlicensed. It looked like on his front was a clock, maybe a pizza looking shape, and he was just, it was like a green vinyl suit. Was this, it's not April Fool. Like, what was the point of this? I don't know.
It's very progressive to have male cage dancers in TNA. I applaud them.
I applaud. I don't know if the hillbillies got it, but
yeah.
But look at that pretty boy over there. Yeah, I don't know. Good Lord.
Yeah, I don't know if this goes anywhere or anything like that. I'm gonna just do a quick Google and see if anything.
That's something we're gonna have to keep track of now going forward. The cage dancers.
Yep.
Yeah, but this was very bizarre.
Like the Nitro Girls.
Yeah, it was very, very bizarre. I don't see anything. Oh, here we go. Okay, hold on one second.
Investigative journalist Steve Willey.
Yeah, this isn't the TNT ratings from the year 2005.
Yeah, exactly. What was going up against this? Well, it was March 5th, so let's see. Wednesday night on ESPN, Jason Kidd and the Nets hosted Paul Pierce and the Celtics.
Some guy won a TNA auction a few months ago, and he won a bid to become one of the cage dancers, and he's engaged. He's in the cage with a superhero suit and a cape.
Oh, God.
Yeah. Hopefully it was for a good charity cause.
I hope so, too. I really do.
I made it.
No wonder he's wearing.
I would have rather have outbid that guy just so I could be in the same cage as Lollipop. Now, that's different.
Yeah.
But yes, I want to be in a. Okay. Let's move. Can we talk some ratchets? Let's talk some matches.
Yeah. Let's talk this one. This is a really fun match between Kid Cash and Amazing Red.
Yes.
Red was evading a bunch of Kid's office right off the back. And they always do the indie standoff, which, you know, they'll still do in some matches these days. They did two separate standoffs where they were exchanging arm drags and missed drop kicks and such to... it was slightly choreographed, but not like to the level of a low-key Amazing Red choreographed a fight. It was a little bit slower paced to an X Division match, considering the two participants to start. And I'm not saying that as a criticism. I thought it was more of a feeling out process. And then all of a sudden, it just like kicks into overdrive when Red hits a Tope Kon Hiro over the top, and they're fighting and kicking on the outside. Cash takes control. I didn't realize they called this Smash Mouth when he throws the chair into the person and then drop kicks it, kind of like a Van Terminator or a Van Daminator, but they've been calling it Smash Mouth, and this has to be a reference to the band, you would think. back in the ring after the Smash Mouth, it was a sunset flip. I thought he was going for a Code Red, but a sunset flip. More back and forth.
I mean, obviously, that's how you follow up a Smash Mouth, Steve Willie, because somebody once told me the world was going to roll you up.
I was hoping there was like too many pauses there, and I was like, come on, Nate, come in with a Smash Mouth pun. And you didn't. I knew you wouldn't let me down. I knew you wouldn't. they did a couple back and forth, just utter ridiculously superplexes. The one that I don't know what Red was supposed to do on this, but it was a German suplex off the top rope from Cash to Red. Red did an entire 360, and it looked for a second like he was going to land on his feet, but it was just too much, and he went back. So he basically did a reverse 450 bump off of this suplex. And at this point, I kind of stopped writing down moves because I couldn't keep up anymore. Later on, Red does another Tope Kon Hiro, but Trinity pushed Cash out of the way, so she ate it. Trinity, you know, I don't usually comment on the looks of women on any of these shows, but wow, she was looking great this week. Twisting flatliner off the second rope, and then all of a sudden Kid Cash does the Tiger Driver 98. Kind of came out of nowhere, but it was a vicious, like Tiger Driver 98, also like the J Driller, kind of a double underhook pile driver, just crushed him with it and got the three. And I didn't see a rating from Meltzer for this, but it was a heck of a match. A spot fest, but a heck of a match. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I could have done with a couple more minutes because, like you said, it did feel like the opening part felt a little bit more brawly than usual for these kind of matches. So, you know, maybe another 2-3 minutes in the middle would have been perfect for this, so they could have a little bit more ramp to, you know, build up on. But, yeah, I'd say, like, from the German spot on, like, it was – like, these guys worked really hard. To your point about Trinity, like, I feel like had better people been in charge, they would have gone about building the knockouts earlier than they ended up doing and making Trinity a focal point because she is very underutilized. But yeah, I thought it was a really good match. Much like the Jerry Lynn match, could have done with some more time. But, you know, when you've got important things like Eric Watts and Disgrace Land, Steve Willie, you take all the time you can get.
Actually, 9:15 your match time on that. And according to Cage Match, Bad Hair, Bad Skin, No Maid, did not have a rating for this one. But I mean, he gave the opener 3 3/4, and I think this match was every bit as good as that one was. So I could put this one at 3 3/4 or even 4 stars.
Yeah,
Kid Cash has been a great representation as X Division champion. And it's almost like, look, I could see the thinking with the booking, like, listen, we want to do, listen, bro, have those two guys go out, pretend that we actually have good matches just so they'll not care when we give them 12 minutes of Eric Watts, bro. You know, it's like, let's make sure they get the great matches while we give them all the crap in between them. That's really what it feels like sometimes, you know, and we can't go wrong with, Kid Cash and Amazing Red. I mean, they were amazing and put on a great show, and they've made the X Division top of the line, absolute top of the line. So they're keeping the in ring aspect of things pretty solid under the circumstances, you know, having to listen to this other drivel. So, and Kid Cash, good heel.
Well, at least we're not getting Eric Watts and multiple Vince Russo segments.
Yes. Oh God, thank God for that. Yes. At least they're having more actual matches. Yes, that is true.
Couple real quick interview segments. AJ charges into, you know, Vince Russo's office was the principal's office. Jarrett gets a little smaller one. It looked like the school nurse's office. And Styles runs in and basically just demands that Jarrett gives him a rematch. AJ's like, I did everything right this time, you know, played fair and still got screwed over. We go back to another behind the scenes interview with this time with Tanae and America's Most Wanted. Just talked about how they're not actually overnight successes, which is what they've been described as. And they've actually been wrestling for 9 years. And one of the things is that they said it, like, in terms of influences was Bret Hart and Kurt Hennig. So they were really blessed to be able to spend some time learning from him. That's how you talk about a wrestler who recently deceased. You don't say. Yes. I don't want to have my kids be fatherless like that bastard Kurt Hennig. All right, America's Most Wanted against, once again, out, Disco and Mike Sanders. This time they're actually going to stay in the ring. And what was the line? Oh, American Most Wanted in that interview before the match started. Tanae asked them what their biggest worry was. And Chris Harris said that his biggest worry was that when Disco and Mike Sanders come out, people will get up and leave. totally right.
Disco Inferno and Mike Sanders were paid handsomely for their work tonight.
Yeah, they probably were. Probably paid more than a lot of other people.
Yeah. Especially they definitely made more than Amazing Red. They definitely made more than Super Crazy.
Yeah.
Probably more than Kid Cash and Jerry Lynn.
It's incredible. Yeah, so AMW just out. There must have been a sale of baby oil because they were like sopping wet. I hope that this was when I watched this afternoon right before we went on the air. And I hope, like, God, there's half an hour left. Please don't let this take longer than 4 minutes. at this point, and part of this, to be fair, is that we've spread these out over a longer period of time. I have no recollection to why the belts were, to use the Vince term, in abeyance. I cannot recall why they were vacant.
I thought it was. I thought Triple X and Mitchell's guys had some kind of schmazo thing in early February. Okay. They had like some double pin or some bullshit, and they just decided to obeyance them. I think they obeyanced them.
Like obeyance-fied.
They got obeyance-fied. Yeah, something of that nature. It had something to do with Triple X and the Disciples. If we go back to like an episode in like early February, late January, early February, and then of course, you know, we had to have a tournament because that's the best thing to exemplify the average tag division that doesn't come close to the above average X division.
Yeah, average at best. You know, in terms of announcing, I actually, with Tanae and West, I can't really criticize them that much.
Mm-hmm.
And maybe it's just because my brain is so destroyed and addled from watching the rest of some of this Drek that their commentary seems great. And I've always liked Tanae. I always think he's got a great mind for wrestling and very well spoken on it. I would think that when you're charging people for a weekly pay-per-view and you're probably bringing in new people every single week or losing people, you would say something like that. They just say, mm-hmm. Yep, vacant belts. And yeah, here I am. I don't remember why. And this is another match where you guys are going to have to help me. Because just like the cage guy who won a contest and an auction, something happened in this match that blew my mind. So this is like a total basic tag match. AMW is in control for a couple segments. Sanders and Disco cheat. They're throwing out the ring. Harris body drops James Storm over the top to hit the both. And it's just real basic double team offense by Sanders and Disco. Did Moondog Spot come in this match? He like all of a sudden you hear like a commotion. I'm like, oh great, who's coming out of the SEX locker room? And it's one of the Moondogs with the bone bashing on the ring. And today he said, oh, it's Moondog Spot. Then you never saw him again.
It's Moondog Spot. He doesn't work here.
He doesn't
work
there. They
didn't even say that. They didn't say why he was there. Like I thought, oh great, he's gonna why. I was
Moondog Spot from
down.
Tough Enough.
I was like prematurely complaining because there's been so many like has-beens in SEX when the point of SEX is like, yeah, we're the future. We're like the hot stuff. But then they'll bring in like Rock and Roll Express and Nikita Koloff, like all these names from the way past. And mm-hmm. then like sloppy Moondog Spot is there, but nothing happened. He just showed up and went away. So that's another thing I need to look up is why that happened.
Yeah.
And so Elix Skipper did end up coming out and did a couple chair shots onto people while Sanders was in the sharpshooter, and that eventually won the match in a weird upset. Glenn Gilberti and Mike Sanders, doubly weird. Well, I mean, weird because they suck and no one cares about them. Doubly weird because AMW has that title match coming up. So to have them lose to Disco and Glenn was something. So I want to ask that you guys talk about this match for a couple minutes, and then I'm going to go back and see if there's anything on Moondog Spot showing up in TNA.
I was stunned. I mean, let's see. Your match time is 8:50. So, I mean, the match times were balanced on this night. I still don't. I don't understand why America's Most Wanted lost this match. I don't understand. This goes back to what I said before about. I understand that Vince Russo's kind of kayfabe philosophy was always putting over the guys that nobody else wanted to put over. The problem is you don't have, I mean, besides AJ, who obviously doesn't, you know, he's like the crown jewel heel and he's not even in the fucking faction. These other guys are a bunch of losers anyway. So it's like you're not putting over good young talent. You're putting over a bunch of goobers, you know? It's not like, you know, putting over young guys in this faction. You're putting over a bunch of losers against arguably probably your best babyface tag team. I don't get it. I don't get it.
Yeah, you're not building anything up, and it would be one thing if Glenn Gilberti and Mike Sanders were on the level of even a Jeff Jarrett and was somebody that maybe you could argue was overlooked in other promotions.
Right.
But like, those guys weren't overrated or underrated. They were properly rated. They were at the position that their talent dictated, and mm-hmm. now you're over pushing them and you're doing it to the detriment of AMW. So like, there's a lot in this company in the early days where it feels like outside of the X Division guys and some of the tag guys, creative is just a mess. Like, there should be no reason why Jeff Jarrett is our top babyface right now, or mm-hmm. our top babyface in name. You know, that should be somebody like AJ or Truth. You know, there should be no reason why you made the sex feud of feud between tradition and this group of losers that Vince Russo has assembled. Like, it none of it makes much sense on paper, and it made even less sense on pay-per-view. Scott mm-hmm. Scola.
Absolutely. Nathaniel Milton. I just don't understand. Look, making a heel faction is awesome. I'm a fan of heel factions. I'm staring at my Four Horsemen set right here in Studio B, and love factions. But if you're going to put guys over, put like good young guys over. Like Triple X, we have not seen in what, 5 weeks? We literally have not seen them since the titles were abeyancized. Like, what the hell? Like, they're like good young guys in that faction. Where the fuck are they? Why are we still putting over Mike Sanders, whose only fan is James Grunberg, and fucking the Disco fucking Inferno? Like, this is the best you've got? I mean, in the general scheme of things, guys, at this moment in you know, March of 2003, TNA is not doing a very good job of finding the disenfranchised of professional wrestling in the early 2000s. They're not. You know, this is the best you're going to get, and you got to put them over, and this is what you got. Steve, can we get to Moondog spot stats, please? I can't really get into this match much longer.
That's all that Moondog spot was on there today, and I'm not going to say anything else about Moondog.
Okay.
Although he died later this year, in 2003. Yes, he died in the ring. During a brawl in a tag team.
Seriously?
Match. Yeah, he was wrestling
in
Memphis.
The ring?
Yeah, well, during a match, he was doing like a concession brawl against the Rock and Roll Express, and he just collapsed and dropped dead. Mm. Yeah, it was a tag match that in sucks. Memphis and right around Thanksgiving of 03.
Wow, that sucks. I didn't even know that.
Yeah, me neither. So yeah, that's all I'll say about Moondog spot. So we got the.
But the Moondog spot beat Kenta Kobashi.
That's a good question. I don't know if they ever made it.
But Eric fucking Watts did. God damn it. Jesus Christ.
So Sonny Siaki comes out. He's pissed at Sanders for the continued interference, and then Sanders actually attacks Siaki, and they fight back up to the ring where they're setting up the plunder for the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. Mm-hmm. And while I don't care about a Mike Sanders Sonny Siaki feud, I actually really thought this was a smart idea.
Mm-hmm.
While they were on live pay-per-view setting up all this stuff to keep the show going and mm-hmm. not so I thought that was a good idea. Hollywood, who is, I don't know who that is. I don't remember her debuting, but she's one of the SEX members. Gets in the face of Desire. They start fighting. After Desire jumps on the back of Sanders, trying to think who brought them together. Oh, the Harris brothers try to bring everyone together.
Oh yeah, because they're a bastion of happiness.
Yeah, the leaders.
Gerbil and Rommel's there.
Yeah. Jackie and Sanders reluctantly shake hands, and Desire and Hollywood go do shake hands. Hollywood, the name of one of the Glow wrestlers from the original Glow series. But yeah, Desire gives a rock bottom to Hollywood. She's not for it. So splintering faction, and hopefully we can get rid of some of the crap soon. Just, I don't know, have it be Siaki and an X, Triple X. I'd be fine with that faction. All right, so then we go to the main event, the Clockwork Orange House of Fun match. We had a little bit of a recap done in the style of a cheesy B-movie-esque horror trailer. Looked very, very low rent. This is the first one of these matches that I'm aware of. I know they do a couple more in TNA. Mm-hmm. In the summer of 2003, they did one in Ring of Honor of Raven versus Punk that was just kind of okay. Raven comes from the outside, but not the SEX locker room. So is he out of SEX now too? And they just didn't, they just kind of just let that go. Cause I mean, he didn't really fit in there at all. It makes more sense that he's a loner and has his own people. Not that he's following Vince Russo. So
Raven was, he was put off obviously by the infrastructure issues going on within SEX, Steve Willie.
And even, you know, the locker room itself was pretty poor, and maybe, I don't know, he's probably hotboxing in a Chevy Nova out in the parking lot in Nashville. So, Sammy comes out. He is drinking Milwaukee's Best again to just prove the fact that he's utter trash.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, luckily we don't have him going all around the ring for his entrance when we get right into the match. The goal is very specific. In order to win this match, you have to go back to that perch where Raven started the show, and you have to get thrown off the perch and thrown through at least two tables. Very specific. So they start just bashing each other, and it is so funny. Like, who thinks of this stuff? Not one table, at least two. Sandman blown up in like 60 seconds, no joke. Raven was placed on the guardrail in a spot that like RVD would do, where he does the twisting leg drop. Sandman just comes off the apron with a regular leg drop, and somehow after this move, Raven just starts bleeding buckets. I don't know how the kick to the back of the head. I just don't know the physics behind that. And I have a minor in physics, and I still don't get it.
It's the centrifugal force, Steve Williams. Yeah. Centrifugal force.
You were a bang incised.
Yeah. And Raven was bleeding a gusher in this match. His whole face and hair was covered. He always bleeds pretty well. They're back into the ring, and Raven immediately hits an even flow. Sullivan, he's a special enforcer. He doesn't do much in this match, or the special observer.
Observer.
Yes. He does help get some of the weapons down from the chains around the ring. There's, you know, garbage cans. There's like a cage wall, some signs. And in a way, like, I'm this faint praise here, you know, I'm going for, but like some of the plunder matches, it takes so long to get the plunder out. It's nice to have a manager, or in this case, Kevin Sullivan, help take them down to make the match move a little faster. Raven hits Sandman with a couple of unprotected chair shots, which are always kind of tough to see in these days. Back then, it was cool. After this, it's just a bunch of random weapon shots. Raven hits an elbow drop through the table. It looked kind of weak. It's been rather one-sided up to this point. Sandman not much getting much offense in until Sullivan starts giving Sandman like a kendo stick, and then they just start, you know, walk fighting to the perch. Under the perch is I love walk fighting. There's a stack three high of two tables, so 3x2 stack tables. Raven shoots a fire extinguisher in Sandman's eyes and kind of hip tosses Sandman off through all six tables, which sounds really cool, but it kind of just
it didn't really implode. It just kind of all fell together.
Mm-hmm.
It was a little disappointing, but I mean, kudos to Sandman.
It certainly was no 62-year-old Steve Borden.
No, that's
AW last man comes weekend
and goes to tables. That is a really great point. Sting's jumping through the tables was way better than this. And that is the match. Raven wins, and I believe that was around 10 minutes, Scott.
I've got cage match has 8:20. It was a decent little sprint. Nothing, you know, earth shattering. I mean, it was a slop shop, but you mm-hmm. know, Steve, were the maybe one of you guys knows. Were the observers, like, were those large egg-headed dudes that, was that part of the Crisis on Infinite Earth storyline, or are those the Watchers? Who were those fucking weird,
I think you're thinking about the Watchers.
The Watchers, yep. Okay, yeah. That's DC, right?
Marvel.
No, yeah. It's Marvel, okay.
Yep, like, I must not interfere. I cannot interfere.
Yeah, well, that's
except
that's...
for when I do.
Not interfere, except I paint myself in stripes because I am an observer, not a watcher, even though he's shaped like an egg. But that's right. I'm trying to remember which one it is. I don't get the painted stripe thing, but I don't get a lot of things on this show. But yeah, I mean, it was fine. I wasn't expecting much. Sandman was clearly drunk. And yeah. I mean, yeah, we're walking out holding the Milwaukee. What was it? The beast, right? You said right.
Milwaukee's beer, Milwaukee's AKA Milwaukee's beast.
The beast.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we think it's his first, but it was actually like his 11th. So,
yeah,
This is what I'm talking about. Is this? Why are they so desperate to bring these guys in that they think the fans, the audience, wants to see when clearly these guys need either a vacation or a facility named after the first lady of a former president. You know what I mean? And her initials are BF. That's what they all need.
Because I think, yeah, they do some great ones, like the super crazy, you know, mm-hmm. showing up. I don't mind people showing up for cameos. You know, AEW has some success doing this, where they might bring someone in just for a couple weeks to do some matches. Like they did with Minoru Suzuki. They brought him in for, you know, a couple weeks.
Mm-hmm.
But like Eric Watts? Moondog spot for like, unless he went into business for himself, well, like just showed up for the ring.
Yeah.
They brought in Dusty for a couple weeks. That actually was, I mean, we didn't need to see a match with Dusty, but you know, that was a good one. Very bizarre.
Yeah. And if you want to do this type of match, even at that time, there are guys who weren't currently signed by the WWE who could have done this style of match better.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, I agree.
When you talked about the walk fighting, Steve, I was like, this entire match could have just been walk fighting. Like, as soon as the bell rings, let's just walk up the ramp. Like, why are we even doing this, guys? Like nobody's into this. The audience, like the crowd isn't really into this. Like they popped for some of the big spots, but they really weren't into this. This was the show where, even at a condensed level, Steve Willie, even missing 17 minutes, it still had way too much fat.
Yeah.
And they could have trimmed a lot off and given some of that time to the matches that really deserved it, to the stories that really deserved it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, on that note.
We have one more little segment here.
Oh.
I don't know if you remember.
We just end with a match.
Eric Raven, Watts
comes out and decides he wants his own. No, I don't.
Yeah, because like Raven is technically a heel. AJ Styles kind of a heel.
Mm-hmm.
So Raven, but Raven here is completely bloody. Look, I mean, he looks battered and beaten, and to be honest, kind of like a badass. And he's like, you know, you stole me, owe me a title shot, Jeff Jarrett. Get your ass out here now. I'm already weakened. You know, I mean, you know, easy pickings for you. Let's do it. Let's do it anyway. So that is a total face move,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so Jeff Jarrett comes out, hits him with the belt, and starts taking free shots on him.
Like that's a heel. I'm cheering for. I'm honestly cheering for Raven. Like mm-hmm. you're filled with blood. But then out comes AJ. He hits Raven with the chair. Hits JJ with the chair. So I mean that's the feud. The three of them is the feud. But out come the Goon Squad of Lawler, Flair, and Watts. Flair brings back his burlap sack and hits him. We finally find out what's in the burlap sack. It's allegedly one of Ric Flair's old NWA belts. I'm not sure if it's a legitimate belt, but that's what he says. And my God, they are honestly trying to make Eric Watts a main eventer. He is the main event segment. Over, you know, hanging over Jeff Jarrett at the end.
There's no way that's actually one of Flair's belts, because if it was, David would have pawned it months before this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. He would have taken, like, nude shots of it with Stacy Keibler or Tori Wilson, whichever one he was going out with in 99 WCW. Guys, I have no words for the... Is Vince Russo trying to say that Eric Watts was held down the last 25 years of his career? Or 15 years? I shouldn't say 20. That's too long. 15 years of his career? I mean, really? I'm thinking to myself, if Vince Russo actually looked in the mirror, if there were any unbroken mirrors at the fairgrounds, and said, I can make Eric Watts a world champion. I'm wondering who was actually drinking the 24 pack of the Beast. Was that really like Sandman's first and Vince Russo drank the other 23? If he really thinks that's the point of having Eric Watts here, I'm going to wrong the right of your dad.
What? Well, here's the thing. It goes back to fathers and sons, Scott. Maybe Vince Russo's kid's favorite wrestler is Eric Watts. And Vince Russo, trying to be a good dad, his final act before he retired from the business for good is to put Eric Watts over.
That's rough. Well, he's failing.
Because what 15, 16-year-old kid wouldn't want to see Eric Watts in the main event? The man that headlined at the Tokyo Dome, allegedly, maybe.
Allegedly, maybe, kind of. Jesus on a stick. Oh my God. And all I want is just to unabeyance the tag team belts. That's all I want.
It'd be like if the Lakers signed Harold Miner. Like, wouldn't you want to see baby Jordan finally go for a ring?
Jesus, I forgot about that. Harold Miner. Oh, good Lord. Well, there we are, folks. In the books, another exemplary episode. Well, we're
as disappointing as he was. Harold Miner was better at his job than Eric Watts ever was.
Yes.
At his.
Yes. That I cannot argue with, Nathaniel. Yes, you are right. Kind of like OJ Mayo. Just coming up with other USC alums. So there we go, folks. There is your newest installment of the Place to Be Nation's Main Event Classic TNA Pay-Per-View Recap. We'll be back. We'll do the next one, obviously, after WrestleMania. Speaking of, gentlemen, great show as always, guys. Episode 191. In 2 weeks, we will have, yes, our annual Mega Mania preview special. We'll preview WrestleMania. We'll preview NXT Stand and Deliver, where all of the wrestlers will do calculus. And did everybody get that joke?
Yes.
Good. I should make sure of that. Braun Breaker, managed by Jaime Escalante. Hey, that's a great movie, by the way. Tremendous comb-over job by Edward James Olmos in that movie, by the way. And, you know, Lou Diamond Phillips is a gangbanger. But anyway, we'll preview that.
That's what Vince Russo was saying all week during this episode. How do I reach these kids?
I reach these kids with Eric Watts, the greatest mullet ever. And also, guys, we'll talk about all the other shows. That's our new little – that's our tradition, guys, is we'll check out the other cards because I'll be at some things that weekend in Dallas.
Nice.
I will be going to JJ's SB. Bet you didn't know that, Steve.
No.
Going to JJ's SB. And we'll talk about what that is in a couple weeks. I'll be watching some Impact. Yeah. So fun and games. In 2 weeks, our, Jesus, we are, what, eighth annual main event Mega Mania preview. Or preview again, two nights of WrestleMania, NXT Stand and Deliver, and all the other big shows going on throughout the DFW Metroplex that week. So, Brother Nate, always a pleasure. Of course, Kings of Sword Patreon. We did the plugs earlier. Always the best. Steve, always the best as well.
Thank you.
And still got my other pod idea in my head involving a possible promotion owned by someone. We'll talk about that in a moment. We'll talk about that in a moment off mic. Guys, have a great couple of weeks, everybody. Enjoy wrestling. We'll be back in 2 weeks with the Mega Mania preview. For Brother Steve, Brother Nate, I'm Brother Scott. You have been in the main event. Sadly, so is Eric Watts. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks.
Hey, yo, Steve Willie.
Hey, yo.
I'm imagining right now Scotty's playing a particular piece of music, but when you hear this song out there, ladies and gentlemen, don't sing it. Bring it.